Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and psychic medium Sherry. The show is about to begin. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for taking the time once again to tune into another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, joined by psychic medium Sherry. What's happening, Sherry? What's going on?
Nothing much. I'm trying to clean house. You know, I got tired of the same old thing. So what I'm doing is I'm actually redecorating my living room.
Well, that sounds like a lot of physical labor.
Not really. It's using your creative juices and throwing a lot of things away or giving things away.
Oh, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tonight,
yeah, so
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Sherry and I are not together, so there's always a slight delay. We're at different locations, which is probably a good thing considering the whole pandemic, or some people might say scamdemic.
We always want to talk with each other anyway, so I can't quit talking. But anyway, no, it's great. No, I'm just trying to, kind of change the theme of things. So that's what I'm doing. I love interior design and being an ex-makeup artist for the modeling industry is kind of being able to be creative using different colors and textures and things like that. So I love what I do. But anyway, what's going on with you, Jason?
Well, let's see. I am laid off without pay over the COVID vaccination. It was not unexpected. I was denied an exemption, and a couple weeks ago I got the first shot. And since I'm not fully vaccinated, which would be 2 weeks post second shot, I don't have to work. But you know what? A lot of people would be upset with that. I'm actually kind of thrilled about it. You get a little bit of time off, but I'm going to have to get the second shot here shortly, which is fine. I hope it doesn't make me sick because I have a lot of things coming up in the next week. But I'll just roll the dice and see what happens. And but we were going to do things a little bit differently tonight, or talk about some things a little bit different, kind of steering away from the paranormal. Talk a little bit about pathology, because that is the department that I work in. I've not worked in it very long. And so I was just kind of a day in the life of somebody that works in a pathology department. I don't know. Maybe that would be completely boring for who's ever listening, but I'll try and give as much detail as possible to make it interesting, because it is interesting to see some of the things that I get to see working in pathology.
Cool. And you were just saying something, Jason. Now that we're live, somebody was go and bring somebody to talk about it.
Oh, you were breaking up there. I didn't quite catch all that.
I said you said you were having
some what?
Somebody was on hold.
Oh yeah. I don't know if your reception is. Yeah, we do have somebody on hold. I don't know if they want to have a question regarding pathology or not, or want to kick down something paranormal, but I'll answer a call here shortly. But I kind of wanted to dig into it and let you know of what it's like to work in pathology. So I started I spent 18 years catching shoplifters and employees stealing. To make a long story short, I was chasing a shoplifter, got hurt kind of badly, had to get surgery, the whole plates, pins, and screws thing. And it allotted me some time and money to get re-educated. And so I decided to go into a lab assistant program at one of the local community colleges and graduated from that. And when I went to that, let me tell you, part of that program was phlebotomy. And if you don't know what that is, that's drawing blood. I hate drawing blood. Absolutely hate it. And if you've seen me in person, I'm 6 foot, pushing 6'3", not a skinny person, and my hands are the size of dinner plates and all calloused over. So if you can imagine somebody of my size trying to draw your blood, it's a scary, scary situation. And so I learned how to draw blood in this lab assistant program. After I graduated, I got hired at a regional laboratory, which was mainly specimen processing, kind of a place where all the blood and specimens go and you do the orders and all that. Pretty boring stuff. Did that for a while. And then I took a sizable raise to go into what they call the resource pool, which is a lab assistant, but you traveled between hospitals doing various things. Unfortunately for me, one of the duties was phlebotomy. I did not think I would have to be drawing blood very often. I was wrong. I was drawing blood all the time. Now, this isn't like your doctor's office where everybody has beautiful veins and it's super easy. This is in the hospitals where you're drawing blood in the ICU or the emergency room or in patients' rooms. And the majority of the people are very old, have very terrible veins. And I got hired out of the resource pool to a hospital, and I wasn't drawing a whole lot of blood, but it was kind of one of those deals where if somebody calls in sick, guess what? You're doing your regular job, and now you're drawing blood for the day. I had horrible experiences drawing blood in the hospital. I also had some wonderful experiences. I was not a terrible phlebotomist, despite the size of my dinner plate hands. I was decent. But I had one experience, and I'm going to kind of transition into the whole pathology. But the one experience that I had shortly after I had moved to a regular position at the hospital, it was one of those deals where somebody called in sick and I was drawing blood all day long. So a couple of the places that I had to go was the emergency room. And the things you see in the emergency room, it's really interesting. And I'm going to try and say some of the grosser things during the show that I saw, because I think that's kind of the most interesting, because the human body is foul and disgusting, especially when things aren't cooperating or operating correctly. But one of the grossest things that I saw in the emergency room, and you see people code and stuff like that, because the phlebotomist at that particular hospital, if somebody has having a stroke or codes, you have to go, you know, because they need their blood right now. So they could be doing compressions on the person and all this other stuff. Yeah. Now, fortunately for me, I never actually had to draw on a code, but I was terrified of that. I have had to draw strokes in while they're in the CT scanner. But thank the Lord I did not have to draw somebody getting chest compressions. It's not that that weirds me out or anything. I mean, maybe it does a little bit. But what's stressful about that and the experience I did not want to have is there are so many people around working on the person. And you're literally like cramming yourself into this chaotic situation, you know, trying to find a vein while they're moving because they're giving chest compressions. And I've seen it, but thank God I didn't have to do that. And so it's very interesting. But getting back to one of the grossest things I saw in the ER, aside from all the mental patients that see you walk by and you just glance at them and they cuss you out, was a poor bloke in there. And his legs were literally like rotting off. Like, it was the craziest thing ever. What's
okay,
that?
What did you say about the person? What did you say? A poor what?
A what?
What were you describing this person before?
Oh, his legs were like literally rotting off.
Oh, okay. Was it diabetes or something? What happened?
It probably was, but the smell was just so pungent and interesting. I always thought rotting flesh would smell like a roadkill on the side of the road. No, it was different. I mean, it was disgusting, but it was just, maybe a corpse is different, I don't know, but the walking dead is just different. And anyways, it was so bad. The smell didn't bother me. I mean, I don't care, but apparently when this person was moved up onto the floor, it literally stunk out the entire wing of the hospital, and they had to like throw everything out of the room because the smell, they couldn't get rid of the smell. So that was kind of gross.
Wow.
So I started there doing the phlebotomy anyways. The terrible experience I had was I'd gotten called shortly after getting there to the emergency room to draw a couple patients. I went in there, I drew the patients, got the blood. It was like no big deal. Next thing I know, the nursing supervisor's coming down, talking to my supervisor, and apparently one of these ladies, they were both old, you know, they were mid to late 70s, complained about me, saying that I touched her inappropriately, which is absolutely ridiculous. So they essentially kicked me out of the hospital. I'm freaking out, like, what is going on? I have no idea. Yeah, that's what I am. I'm a predator of old people. So apparently this person was just out of their mind over some infection or something like that. But fortunately for me, their husband was in the room and was like, no, he didn't do anything wrong. But that kind of soured the whole thing for me doing phlebotomy, because anytime I had to draw a patient, you know, an elderly female patient, I was like, it just made me nervous because people are just nuts. I mean, can you imagine that? And
you wonder if they, you know, some people are mentally stable, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and that's it. I mean, you deal with, I mean, everybody has their own life experiences. You know, some people, they have mental illness, chemical imbalances, traumatic experiences, this and that, and I get that. In fact, I don't know that there's even one sane person on the planet. I mean, we all have our issues. Mine's anxiety and overthinking. And that's part of the problem with me is, you know, if something weird happens, I ruminate over it, and I'm like trying to just spend way too much time thinking about things that I don't need to be thinking about or focused on for too long. Anyway, but I also had some great phlebotomy experiences. I had, you know, people tell me, you know, how fantastic I was, and just the interesting conversations of somebody that landed on the beaches in Normandy during D-Day. But it always takes, it's funny how we always focus on the one bad thing, which kind of wipes out all the good experiences. One bad experience that I had wiped out all the bad experience, or all the good experiences I had.
Wow. Yeah, we can't let one bad person or person that just, you know, that is not, I don't know, just positive and thinking good things, you know, to allow them to go and you know, make it so that you're really an awful person. Because and this is what I've noticed, is that you cannot please everybody. There's always somebody that is going to poo-poo you and everything else. So what you can do is just be the best you can be, and the people that are like that, just kind of try and stay away, you know, try and keep away from them.
Yeah, absolutely. I even driving to work 2 days in a row, I had two road ragers, you know, well, not road ragers, I had a semi truck intentionally try and run me off a bridge. The very next day I had another guy nearly T-bone me. And then I'm just driving on a straight road going the speed limit, and he's pulls out to try and T-bone me or scare me, I don't know what. But then he pulls out, races up behind me, and starts riding my thing, and I did nothing to this person. Like, he was on a side street pulling out, and I'm just going 40 miles an hour. I see it happens almost every single day, my commute. Somebody is just freaking psychotic.
Wow. Yeah, it happens. Those are the days that, oh my gosh, just try and Yeah, I'll try and let it ride. My goodness. So I'm just curious with the guy. I don't know if you ever watched Critical Situation. That's probably why. I mean, I just love medicine. I mean, that's why I'm in Chinese medicine. I just love medicine. But to see somebody that in when he was admitted in the hospital, it must have been pretty bad. Do you think they might have had to do an amputation, or do you think they might have saved the leg?
I mean, it wasn't like gangrene, but it was like, I don't know how you could not amputate it. The risk of infection would be far too great. And it's such a large part of the body, you know. I would assume amputation. And working at the hospital, because I also was in charge of our gross room, and the gross room is the pathology, basically. I would get the occasional limb, you know, foot, usually their feet. But I didn't have it. I never saw two legs come through. So an operation like that, though, probably would have been transferred to a bigger hospital. That would be a pretty major procedure. But diabetes,
that's,
I mean, it's almost always diabetes. I mean, seriously, if you got your feet rotten off, it's almost always diabetes. I mean, you can have peripheral circulation problems, but usually that stuff's precipitated by diabetes.
Let me ask you, I'm not a needle person. I don't like needles. I don't like surgeries. I just don't like that. I find it sometimes a little bit necessary depending on the procedure, transplants, you know, transfusions or something like that. But how, as a phlebotomist or a formal phlebotomist, how do you get it so that it's very painless in inserting the needles? I hate needles. How do you find it becomes very painless to the person if they're very sensitive like me?
I never ran into too many people that, I mean, I did have people that were afraid of needles. Actually, this is funny. My coworker at that hospital was a phlebotomist, a long time phlebotomist, like 15-year phlebotomist. You know, tens of thousands of blood draws this lady's done. And she would need her blood draw occasionally, and I would be, and she would ask me to draw her blood. And it's funny that she was so, like you, terrified of needles. And it was hilarious drawing her blood because she was freaking out the whole time. And she's a phlebotomist. But I don't know. I mean, you just got to distract the person, talk to them, you know, make sure you don't have them look at it. And you never surprise them with anything. You know, before I would, you know, stick the needle in, you know, do the tourniquet, clean everything, and be like, okay, here comes the poke. That's what I would say. Here comes the poke. And then stick it in. But it also depends on where they're drawing the blood. Some places hurt more than others. I mean, I drew myself in the hand twice. That's challenging to draw your own blood off your own hand. But I was able to do it. Hands hurt a lot more. But if they're going in your AC, in the center of your, behind your elbow, it shouldn't hurt too bad. But it's a skill. Some people hurt. I've had very skilled phlebotomists just make me want to punch them in the face because it hurts so bad. And then I've had phlebotomists that I barely felt it, or maybe not even felt it. I don't know. It's just, you got to be quick with the needle. You just can't slowly drive it into their skin. You know, you got to figure out where the vein's at and just pop it in. And if you miss it, if nothing's coming out, then just back it up a little bit until the blood starts flowing.
Wow, that's the whole key, huh? That's the whole key. You don't go and go real slow. You
no,
to
don't
get
go
done.
Slow. You just boom in there. And if it's a skilled phlebotomist, they'll be able to tell, you know, how deep the vein is. So they'll, you know, and if you go through the vein, it's not a big deal.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they might have a little bruise, but you should see some of the bruises I gave on these very, very old women in their hands where their veins are paper thin. And you're sitting there, and you get in the vein, but you see this bruise growing, and you're like, oh, no. And you're like, because you need the blood. Some people are very challenging to draw. That's another thing. People's anatomy is just similar, but it's not the same. Just because somebody has a vein in one particular spot isn't necessarily true for the next person. That's why you have to have good finger skills to be able to palpate the skin and know what a vein feels like versus a tendon and stuff like that. It's very bouncy.
So it's an art. Yeah, you just can't go in and just poke. Like you said, it's an art. Yeah, how do you get somebody that knows what they're doing and makes it quick? You know, that's why I have the blood test. You know, I never try to get a blood test because I just don't like that kind of stuff. Oh, my gosh, just petrified. I don't like doctors anyway, you know. But anyway, yeah, that's my story.
You never want to go fishing. I mean, you never just want to look at somebody's arm and just be like, God, I don't feel the vein, but I know it's in there somewhere. You don't want to hit an artery. I mean, you don't want to, you know, that can be problematic. So you got to be careful.
Wow, that's
and you'll
crazy.
Know if you hit an artery. You'll know if you hit an artery because it'd be super obvious. Because when you're drawing out of a vein, the blood comes out very dark. And if you're hitting, because the blood's not oxygenated, if you're hitting an artery, it'll come out bright red.
Oh,
so you're like,
wow.
Oh, that's an artery.
Oh,
anyway.
You don't want that. Oh, my gosh, that's crazy. No, I hate needles. I don't like surgery, needles. I that's maybe why I picked Chinese medicine is where I am in my domain, because I just like it. Everything is energy, and, you know, I've seen where they have, you know, tumors in medical Qigong where they actually put needles instead of putting a person out. They actually saw this. I can send you the link if I can find it. But they actually literally numbed the person, the whole head, so that they were going to do brain surgery. All nothing but acupuncture needles. They didn't feel anything. They had needles all over in the head to anesthetize them. And then what they did is they had two practitioners, two masters in medical Qigong and one doctor in medical Qigong. And you can see this tumor, this cancerous tumor, was literally shrinking before your eyes. Literally, you could see as it was going live that the tumor was shrinking and shrinking. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Of course, you know, I would be a little skeptical of that. I'd have to see that from my own eyes. But.
Yeah, you would have to, definitely. That's something that would be very interesting to see. But, I love medicine. I'm learning about it. I love, you know, hearing about it. I don't know if you've ever seen the show on YouTube. It's called Critical Situation. They're all about trauma. Trauma, about trauma units and, you know, how they help people in things.
I don't have to watch it. I live it. Not really.
yeah, you don't have to watch it. You live it. Oh, my God.
So with pathology, okay, so working at a hospital, doing phlebotomy, lab assisting, which running tests, flus, and all this stuff. So anyways, I decided to leave my employer after 6 years, got hired as a temporary employee with another health system in a pathology department, just as a pathology lab assistant. I started there at their central laboratory, which all these specimens come in. And you really, when you work at a central laboratory, especially in pathology, you get to see everything. And so, you know, you get the limbs, you get the tumors, the literally everything, bone, bullets, rectal foreign bodies. I mean, it's interesting. Now, why, you know, if somebody, pardon me if this is graphic, but this is in medicine, I used to think, you know, if you surf enough online, you hear about people are always going to the hospital with stuff, you know, stuck up their butts, you know, and so you always think it's, you always hear, or I was always under the assumption that was like a super common thing. And when I was at the hospital, I think I was aware of that happening twice. It is not super common. And, but those things, it's very odd. any kind of foreign body goes to pathology. So if they extract a deodorant can out of somebody's colorectal region, it's still got to go to pathology. Or it's, you know, if they have surgical hardware or IUD or catheter, those go to surgical pathology to get grossed. So basically the specimens would come to me and they needed to be ordered, and it's kind of complicated, and you have to print these little plastic cassettes where they put the tissue in it. And then once that's all done, there's a whole bunch of stuff you do, but that goes to the PA, which is a pathology assistant. And all the pathology assistant does is they gross it. And what that is say if that you've given them somebody's appendix, they have a little dictation machine or whatever that you talk into, and then it types it out. And they just do a visual examination, and they probably weigh it, and they measure it and stuff like that. That information goes into the computer system. And then it goes to another person that works in transcription who transcribes all that and, you know, fixes it, whatever. And then it goes to a pathologist and who looks at the tissue and stuff like that. And there's various other departments stuff can go, like cytology and histology and FISH. That's a department. Don't ask me what that is because I don't even know. And cytogenetics and stuff like that. So as a lab assistant in pathology, you are kind of the front person of receiving everything. And you also have some duties that are kind of not so pleasurable, I guess you could say. Aside from seeing all the specimens and the cancers and all the things terrible that can happen to somebody, there's a lot of equipment in these departments that require hazardous chemicals. One of these...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I do not like chemicals. I do not like pills. I don't, you know, there's some nasty things. And one of the things is when you slice the tissue so that the pathologist can read it under a microscope and come up with a diagnosis, you have to stain it. And there are these big stainer machines that are all robotic. So you have the slide. The tissue goes to cytology. They slice it super, super thin, and they put it on a slide. And it's got to go through a stainer so that the pathologist can read the cells. Well, every day that stainer has a ton of different chemicals, including but not limited to eosin, 100% alcohols, 95% alcohols, water, deionized water. But the two that always make me nervous, hematoxylin, that doesn't make me nervous. But the two chemicals in that dang machine that make me nervous, in order of make it scary to me, is xylene. That's just nasty. You smell it and you just know that it's going to kill you. And then there's another chemical, the one that I'm really afraid of, which is called clarifier 1. And that's one of the ingredients in there. So just the smell of that, and then you read the bottle, because I like to research what I'm working with, and it's got all these icons, and it's going to kill you basically if you touch it. And, you know, you read the MSDS sheet, which is the material safety data sheet, which tells you what to do from exposure, and it just horrifies you when you read that. But you got to change all those fluids out. You know, you got to pour it out and, you know, put new, fresh fluid in so you're handling it, and it's easy to spill stuff. And you fill these big jugs up with all these chemicals that are kind of mixing around inside, or most of them, and then you got to take them somewhere else and dump them in these huge, big drums. And it's just, it's kind of scary because it's just very easy to bump something, or, you know what I mean? And these are very volatile chemicals. So if you spill it and you're trying to clean it up, if it's a substantial spill, then, you know, you're going to be breathing that stuff. If it's a really bad spill, then you call there's people that deal with big spills, but, you know, it just makes me nervous. And I know you're really into like the nature thing, so I imagine you would not want to deal with those chemicals.
No, it's hard. You have to dispose them correctly. There's a lot of chemicals. Do you notice, is it just me, but I go to the store once in a while to go, once a week to go and get groceries. But I notice that when you go down some of these aisles or go to these stores, they got that funky chemical smell to them. It's almost like they use some kind of chemical that is just so bad and just really not pleasing. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've smelled like bleach and ammonias before. I don't think I have a really sensitive nose.
It's real bad chemical smell. Just bad. Bad. Yeah.
No wonder why everybody comes down with cancer, because we're constantly exposed to electronic radiation and chemical exposures. I mean, formaldehydes, like in your carpet. I mean, it's literally chemicals are leaching out of everything, and our bodies are just absorbing it.
Yeah, and you just try and stay away from that. Stay away.
The other chemical, probably the most common chemical working in a pathology department that's kind of nasty is formalin, which is basically almost all the tissue that you get will be in formalin. It's a preservative. It basically consists of formaldehyde and I believe some alcohols. And that's really something you don't want to get. It's a known, carcinogen, mutagen, and it's just toxic. That's a common one because stuff leaks everywhere but that one doesn't make me super, super nervous. But it's, so it's interesting. But I wanted to tell you about working in a regional level laboratory in pathology is different from working in a hospital pathology. I've been training out at a hospital for the last month. And what's interesting about working in a hospital, and it's not the same for every hospital, this particular hospital, the pathology assistant assists in certain procedures. So, yes, you're doing kind of the same thing there, collecting the specimens, OR drops the stuff off. There's actually a pathologist, which is a medical doctor there that you work closely with. And there are certain things that, like, the OR might drop off somebody's colon or bowel. And then you have to grab the pathologist who will cut it open and, interpret what he sees. And he can also take small pieces of tissue and put them in the cryostat machine, which it cuts really thin slices of it. And then you stain it and you're still dealing with the chemicals. But what you do see a lot of interesting stuff come out of the emergency room. But what interests me most about working in a hospital, the particular hospital being trained at, is the procedures, which it's kind of nerve-wracking. The hospital that I've been at, there are CT procedures. So if they're doing like taking a biopsy of somebody's liver or lung, you've got to basically go there and collect the slide from the doctor and then go stain it and then give it to the pathologist. And then there's stuff that goes on in ultrasound where you have a cart with a microscope and stains and same kind of thing. You stain it for the pathologist. And then there's FNA procedures where it's fine needle aspirate. So you're actually in the room there with the doctor and the patient and they're sticking needles in people's necks to get thyroid tissue or lymph node or whatever. And it's just stressful because you're basically making the slides right there. So the doctor goes into the neck and gets what he needs, hands you the needle, and then you got to make slides. And there's a lot of, it's not like poking the person once. I mean, there's multiple sites and they usually do four passes. So, it just gets very, can get very stressful. So I know how much you love needles. That's a lot of needles. I don't think you'd do well in that procedure.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. No. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't like needles. Nope. So, but yeah, I love listening to you. It's a very interesting job. Let me ask you, have you had any, speaking of the paranormal, have you had any interesting things in the paranormal when it comes to being a pathologist?
Well, I wish I was a pathologist because then I'd be making $400,000 a year. So the regional laboratory where I started with the pathology somewhat recently used to be an old hospital. And a lot of the stuff for our department is stored in the basement. And, man, I walk down there and I'm like, this is haunted. I just get the vibe. You know, there are certain rooms that you walk in that you just wonder, what was in this room 50 years ago? Because it's just got just a weird energy to it. And one of these rooms I was in one time, and I kind of was getting a little freaked out because I'm in there, I'm between these two rolling racks. So I can't see in front of me. I can't see behind me. I can only see to my left where I would walk out because I'm big two rolling rack things full of cassettes. And I start hearing loud noises coming from inside the room, and I'm like, what? And I stop, and I'm looking around. Well, I'm not looking around. I didn't poke my head around the edge. And then I hear these loud noises, and this was the room that a lot of people are afraid to go into. So, because they just sense some dark energy or something in there. And I keep hearing like somebody's in the room with me. And I actually started to get a little, I wasn't panicked, but I was like, I was getting spooked. So then I walk out and I look and there's a window at the very end of the room. And there's like this adjacent room right there. And like somebody was stacking boxes and I was like, oh, thank God. So yeah, no, it was not paranormal.
Yeah, especially in hospitals and things like that, yeah. So it can be pretty active, a lot of activity.
Well, there have been people down there that have seen stuff. I didn't see anything down there. I never had a problem going down there. I actually kind of liked it. But, yeah, you can – there's all sorts of crazy things that people have seen down there and had a lot of experiences. I would love to do a paranormal investigation down there. In fact, my coworkers at the regional lab, not the hospital where I've been at, we want to do a paranormal investigation. We're trying to work out the details, and we wanted to go to Edgefield, which is a big haunted old poor farm in Troutdale, Oregon. And I've done a paranormal investigation there before. So we've been talking about it, and so some date in the future, we're going to go out and do a paranormal investigation. I have all the equipment, so I don't have to buy nothing.
Really? That's great.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting more into it a little bit. All I've done is Paranormal Horizons. I stopped doing paranormal investigations a long time ago, and now I kind of think I might kind of ease my way back into it a little bit.
That would be fun. Do you think your girlfriend might be interested too?
She'd probably go, yeah, but, you know, we'll see.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, it's time to get out a little bit and do a little bit of the fun stuff and stuff like that. Speaking of paranormal, I rented the new Conjuring movie, Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, last night.
Really?
And, yeah, I watched it. I think it was like early access on Prime. I think I paid $6. I was like, you know, I'm kind of a fan of the Conjuring series. Mainly because, well, one, I'm a huge horror movie fan, but mainly because of the very first Conjuring movie and our very frequent lovely guest, Andrea Perron, who that whole thing was based on. So I always try and catch the Conjuring movies. I liked it. It was good. It was worth renting. Was it over the top in Hollywood eyes? Absolutely. Ridiculously over the top, but it's entertaining.
Was it scary?
Yeah, some parts were scary. But, You know, it's the typical, you know, there's a few jump scares in there, and but it was a little over the top for me, but it's worth renting if you like horror movies. I prefer more of the subtle scariness type stuff. Plus, I like things to be true and accurate. I don't like it when Hollywood gets their hands on something, takes a legitimate haunting, and then turns it into, like, the walls are bleeding and people are levitating out the window, and it's just like, come on.
Yeah, just I'll have to have Andrea and see what she has to say about that. It really does. It's going to be interesting. Very, very interesting. She's supposed to be in production with her own show, exactly what it happened, you know, being at the farmhouse. And I saw that she's been advertising, you know, that the farmhouse is being up for sale.
It's up for sale, but is grossly overpriced. The people that bought it last time paid, don't quote me on these numbers, but it was like $300,000 or something, and they've listed it for sale for like $1.2 million or $1.5 million, and they've only owned it for like 6 years or something like that. So it's like a moneymaker. If I had the money, I would buy it, because that is, that location goes down in history. So,
I imagine it does. It's a big one. Yeah. Wow.
But just the fact that they're selling it for that much more, it's just like a money thing, you know. Real estate is ridiculous, but.
What's that?
Granted, real estate prices are ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah. You think Oregon's getting bad, you know, because a lot of people are moving from California, you know.
I mean, my place, my little humble place, my little humble townhome, you know, according to Zillow and all that, it's, you know, already appreciated like $50,000. I've been here a year. So
wow.
It's just ridiculous to me.
Wow.
It's supply and demand. There's such a shortage of housing, so people are paying $100,000 over list, and you fight for it, and the people that pay cash win. So
yeah, and you get a lot of people that have money from California or wherever. They're moving all over the place. It's not just Oregon. They're moving to Washington, Idaho, Nevada, Arizona, Florida. You know, all those other places.
Yep.
So, but no, are you looking forward to going back to work, really?
Let me just answer that by saying I'm going to enjoy my time off. I only want to work if I have to. Like, if I had money, I might work a little bit, but I have this dream, this crazy dream of one day buying like a Sprinter van and having it customized so that I can live in it and just go wherever. So hopefully one day I can realize that. Just, you know, and hopefully I have a house too where I could have a base so when I get sick of it I can just go back home. But man, that to me just sounds just the adventures you could have being able to live out of a van. And it wouldn't be like a cheap van. I mean, I'm talking like a nice Mercedes, custom done with everything I need in the van, because I'm kind of spoiled, so I can't just do, you know, the rape van or the pedo van, you know, the 1979 Chevy van. It's got to be something nice.
Well, you can stay where you're at. Just, you know, you could. You can just rent your place out.
Yeah, it's possible. But I need to work. I mean, for the time being, hopefully one day I'll be able to retire and be able to enjoy life a little bit more.
Yeah, wow. So any paranormal stuff going on in your house? Or has it been pretty quiet?
I have not seen anything. My girlfriend just the other day was in the kitchen, and I was down there too, and she said somebody whispered in her ear or whistled in her ear or something. But I don't know. I don't think my place is haunted. If there's any activity, it's because something's passing through.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Now I'm looking over my shoulder because I'm going to get freaked out. So I mentioned this before. This is just really irritates me. Just even thinking about this irritates me. When she saw that apparition months ago, and I talked about this, it freaked me out because I don't want that stuff in my house. And I was making dinner, and I was walking up the stairs because I didn't want to eat in the living room because that's where it was spotted. And I'm walking up the stairs, and I told you I fell, and I hurt my knee, and then I think it started to get infected. So I did 2 trips to urgent care. My insurance covered none of it. So I had a $600 bill. It was ridiculous. And the reason I got charged $600, I mean, this was all over me being afraid a ghost was following me up the stairs. Like, that never would have happened. I was looking over my shoulder, half expecting to see some sort of entity behind me. And had I not been doing that, I wouldn't have fallen, and it wouldn't end up costing me $600.
Wow.
How ridiculous is that? You end up hurting yourself because you think a ghost might be following you up the stairs.
Wow. You're just poor thing.
It's my mind. I think too much. It's something gets stuck in my brain. It doesn't take much to freak me out.
Wow. Yeah, I don't like going in that space. I really don't like that space, to be honest with you, because when you do, your mind can play tricks on you, definitely. And you
don't want to be
consumed by those kind of things. You don't want to manifest things that are not a good thing, you know?
So I just got reminded of something. Just when you were talking, remember last week I talked about my friend dying and the dream I had of him?
Yes.
And I was kind of confirming to him that he died, and I was helping him cross over. Maybe, I mean, it was probably just a dream, but whatever. I had another dream. But this one was even stranger. So the next dream that I had was with him too, and I was trying to get him to explain to me life after death. And he showed me this long ass mathematical formula. I mean, calculate whatever it was. It was like something you see from mathematicians. And it was lines and lines and lines. And the synopsis of this whole thing, what he was trying to explain to me, was that when you die, your life carries on in a parallel. It's like we're living, you never really die because you're living the same life on different levels and different something. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense. It's like there's a parallel life of me sitting here talking to you right now. I die. Like, it was almost like you wouldn't even know that you died because you just carry on in this parallel existence. It was weird, but this mathematical formula was just, it was crazy. Like, I wouldn't even know. I suck at math. I can't even add. Okay, I can add, but I can't do much more. So I don't know.
Wow.
Was it just another dream, or was this a contact where he was trying to explain to me in some sort of crazy-ass quantum mathematical formula about how it all works.
I think it could very well be, you know, a parallel universe.
Yeah, I don't know. If I died right now, I think from what I recall, I could be getting this wrong. This happened. This was like a week ago. If I died right now, it would be indistinguishable because I would be carrying on in some parallel universe that coincides with our own. I don't know. Strange stuff.
That could happen. You just never
who knows?
Know. Well,
or
who
it was
knows?
Just a dream,
yeah.
And a bunch of hooey.
The thing is, he's coming to you. That's awesome. He's coming to you. That's did it feel like it was a visitation, like he was real and everything?
It wasn't as profound as the initial dream, but it was close. It was it was like different.
Wow.
I don't know, but he is visiting me. Who knows?
Amazing that you're having connections like that with the person that's crossed over to me. And I'm just saying this because it feels like to me that you are having a visitation. I mean, people get parsed out between dreams and visitations. Well, there's a reason why you're connecting, that you're connecting with that soul. And that soul is trying to, in his own way, trying to give you messages. It may be, you know, a little bit diluted and it may be a puzzle, but there usually is a connection of why that person is trying to go and you know, connect with you. And it's really, be honored by that, Jason, because I feel like when you do, that person feels comfortable to be able to reach you at a place where you're asleep. And when you're asleep, you are vulnerable. Your etheric body, you have no control, but your etheric body goes out and, you know, your soul leaves its body and you can go anyplace. That's why people don't understand, you know, energy medicine or anything that is that people don't understand with energy. Everything is energy. You know, when the person just dies, just because they died doesn't mean that they're dead. They're energy and they can come back and forth. They can go anywhere. They can be, and I would not be surprised, they can be in two places at once. So, I mean, just like some people don't believe in aliens. Well, I've never had an alien encounter. I've never had I've seen a UFO, but I'm not sure to say it. Yes, I have seen a UFO, but I'm not going to discount that either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But be very honest. I would be honored.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll keep you posted. I'm sure there will be other ones.
Because usually people don't do that very often. I mean, I know, being in the work that I do, and when I open up the veil to receive messages that are people that are crossed over, whether it's clairaudiently, be clairvoyantly, or clairsentiently, you know, it's people want to reach out to people that they feel comfortable with, and apparently your friends are very comfortable to be able to reach out to you. I have dreams once in a while, but not very often. But I've had dreams before where I've had my mom used to come over, but it's not very often. If anything, and it's not even frequent anymore, it's my ex-husband. My ex-husband has crossed over. So he used to go and visit with me in dreams, you know, not regularly, but maybe every 4 or 5 months. But now it's not even that. So, but be honest when they do come through. And pay attention. If you can remember, pay attention. What was the feeling? Say, sometimes they don't say anything. Sometimes they're talking in riddles. Sometimes they're, you know, conveying something, but it's not straightforward. You know, when you have to pay attention. If you could remember the essence of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's really cool. But, yeah, I'm so glad that you have that visitation. Yeah, keep in touch with me. And I hope, Jason, that you can, you know, enjoy life and be able to find something that you're passionate about, you know, whether it's staying home and paid for being a, one of those people that do, you know, when you're gaming and you're maybe you can be making money when you're gaming. You know, you enjoy playing the game, but you also
yeah, that'd be
money
awesome. Yeah.
That's your dream job, staying home and enjoying doing what
dream
you want.
Dream job, totally. All right, well, I'm going to get me some dinner and
okay.
Unless you have
yep,
anything else.
Nope, and I got to tell people, I don't know, but I'm just going to lay it out there. I'm no longer, well, I'm in the transition of getting my new site. I have a company in Hawaii that are doing my website. We'll see. It's Ilani Marketing Company in Hawaii, and they are doing my website. So I'm no longer going to be under Weebly, the www psychic medium Sherry. Go ahead, still go there. But once we move everything around and create this new website, I will have my own domain that I've been paying for, God knows, but not using. So, but no, I'm having my new website come in. I'm really excited. It's going to be kind of new and different. And yeah, I just enjoy doing what I love doing to help people. And so anybody wants to get a hold of me, just right now, get a hold of me. You at Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry, Sherry, or right now temporarily, www.psychicmediumsherry, Sherry.weebly.com. And when everything gets up and running, I'll let you guys know, but it will be www.psychicmediumsherry.com without the Weebly. So, yeah, it's in the process, and we're ready to rock and roll and spread some good stuff. So until next week, Jason, we'll let you go. And thanks for everybody being part of Paranormal Horizons. So until next week.
All
right. Take care, everybody. Hey, stay well. Peace.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Take care. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.